Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Fanti, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. You may note that we are doing a little bit of a different thing this week. We're calling these the Trapped in the Closet episodes.
Trapped in the Closet?
I am politics and pop culture journalist Jared Hill.
And I'm your favorite entertainment journalist, Travell Anderson. We're coming to you from our quarantine coronavirus bunkers. I am in my closet as we record this. Jared, where are you?
I am in the second room in my house.
Second room, y'all. Y'all heard that?
I'm not doing this with you. coming up on the show today, we have talked about this quite a bit, that this might be coming up, and it is finally here. Travell, you wanted to do this in the special.
Yes, we're finally getting into all things
That doesn't work.
It does work. The people who know, they know, okay? It's got layers to it. And as always, we'll have our dishonorable mentions. But before we get into all of that, it's time to do a very special tough question.
Yeah, so this is our segment where we tackle a question that one of us is facing, for which there isn't an easy answer. And I don't know if anyone has heard, but apparently there's a virus that is really freaking everybody the fuck out.
The Rona,
as we've heard it. And so we're all living through this hysteria about COVID-19. And as we approach what is almost certainly going to be a shelter in place, that will probably be coming any time now for at least all of the major cities, if not the entire country. The question is, as a single person, do I have to shelter in place alone? Do I no longer get to mix and mingle and Netflix and chill and have the sex while we're in the age of the Rona? I don't know.
Well, I mean, so I have a partner and we have been social isolating,
social distancing.
Yes, together. Because last week we took a trip for work purposes to the Bay Area. And so when we got back, we were like, well, maybe it just makes sense to bunker down together because, you know,
so if you're shacking up and living in sin.
Very that. My grandmother's rolling in her grave again. and so I don't have this issue, but I do think the gays are going through this circumstance. Like, there've been a lot of reports about like people and like sex parties that have like they've been like doing their last hurrah, if you will.
Oh my God.
In terms of, like, this was before, like, the major shutdown in New York took place. And they were like, listen, the sex party, it's happening tonight. It's going to be the last one. You can only do, like, only 60 people can come in at a time.
What?
Like, they were employing all of these restrictions. But I think that goes to show that the gays are really dealing with this question. You know, because there's also been talk about like how there have been, I don't know if there are memes or whatnot, but there's been things online about like, if you're going to have the sex, you know, maybe you do it doggy style instead of like missionary, like face to face.
We're going to bring you another, an ad from another Maximum Fun show. We'll take a quick break. I feel so many different ways about this. Number one, enraged because I didn't get an invitation. Number two, jealous because I didn't get an invitation. But number three, like, this is crazy. Like, you could not be in a more communicable situation than having sex at a party. Like, that seems so stupid.
Well, maybe it is, but the thing is, like, we as human beings, right, have this natural inclination to want, you know, intimacy and be with people. And so,
I've heard about that.
It's not absurd that, like, people could be, like, trying to figure out and navigate, you know, should you still be doing your hookups on Grindr? Should you still be on your Jacks? And I think the obvious answer is like, okay, maybe not. Or I have to shout out our producer, Laura Swisher, because she said before we started recording, maybe you just like choose
that
one.
Wait, I'm sorry. Who are you? I don't know this name. Because I think it's Laura Swisher!
You're childish. Sorry, go ahead. But she suggested maybe you just choose one part, that lucky somebody who you just hunker down with for what looks to be a couple weeks. You know, it's what, it's 14-day incubation
period. It's going to be much longer than that, sweetie.
Well, you start at 14 and then you work your way up depending on what the situation calls for.
But that's real risky because, like, if it's a new person especially, what if y'all can't stand each other by day 3?
Well, like, you got a guest room.
No. Hell no. And I only have a guest room right now because the roommate that I normally have flew the coop and was like, I'm going home to where they're from. And I'm like, I get it. But, like, I mean, come on. Like, it's kind of crazy. I don't know. I feel like the idea of hunkering down with someone only really works if you have, like, a solid family or, like, a significant other that you want to do something like that with. But I feel like there are so many people who haven't even been heeding these warnings about not being out in public places. We saw photos over the weekend about people at Disneyland and, like, all kinds of crazy stuff where I just don't understand what people are thinking. But I feel like for me, I'm probably going to just be in the house by myself for an indefinite period. It's going to be a long time. And
Let me ask you this. Have you been, like, at least swiping? Have you been, like, I'm wondering if, like, the conversations on the apps have changed. Like, if folks on Tinder and they're just like, hey, girl, what you do? Like, you know, not what you doing, but, like, how you surviving the Rona?
Well, so I had a dinner date planned for this week. Ooh, right? And how so, you doing? But you done? Mm-hmm. You okay? But the date, I'm obviously not going to go on the date now because we're all cooped up in the house. And so then said person was like, oh, we should do a FaceTime dinner date. And I was like, whoa, okay.
That's cute.
It's cute. And so, like, full disclosure, it will be after we wrap this up. I have a FaceTime dinner date. And I don't even know what to do with that. But then, like, it was actually really cute. Because, like, he'd ask for the date. And so then I got an email with, like, a Grubhub gift card to buy dinner or something so that it could be delivered at the same time.
Oh, he's a keeper.
I thought that was very cute.
He is a keeper, bitch. Well,
listen, to be clear, God only knows how the date will go. But I'm just saying, listen, it was a very cute idea. So I think people are going to be doing things that are more innovative. And, like, I think people are probably, there's going to be a whole lot more D-pics going around. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, people are going to have to get creative.
You were going to be doing the phone sex is what you just said to me. That's what I heard.
I did not say that. And no comment. Mind your damn business. I'm single and I'm out here doing the things.
Well, anyway, I think now that you have told us that you have a date immediately after this recording, episode drops on Thursday, you're going to have to update the people on how the date went, okay?
I will have to do no such thing.
I will make sure I ask and put you on the spot on Twitter.
Before we jump out into a break, I want to make sure that you guys can let us know what you're doing and what you think. So number one, should people be shacking up and planning to go to hell like Travel is doing? Or should people be like coming up with more innovative things? I want to know what you all are doing. So you can hit us up on the social media at Fanti Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. Or you can email us at fanti@maximumfun.org.
All right, there, everybody. We're going to take a quick break and let you hear about some other things going down in these Maximum Fun streets. And when we come back...
Hey, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin. Together, we're The Flophouse,
a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Movies like Space Hobos, Into the Outer Reaches of the Unknown and the Things That We Don't Know, the movie, and also Who's That Grandma?
Zazzle Zippers, Breakdown 2, and Backhanded Compliment.
Elvis is a Policeman.
Baby Crocodile and the Happy Twins.
Leftover Potatoes?
Station Wagon 3.
Herbie Goes to Hell.
New episodes available every other Saturday.
Available at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bye. Bye.
All right there, everyone. Welcome back to Fanti. We're finally going to get into the one, the only Monique today. So I have to start by saying, one, I love a person who just has one name. Like, you know who we're talking about. It's very similar to Beyonce, you know. Jared, I don't hear you, but I can feel you looking at me.
Wow, you do know me quite well.
Anyway, let's start by saying that she might be my favorite actress. So I really love this woman. Like, I love fried chicken. And anybody that knows me knows I love me some fried chicken, okay? But the actress and comedian known for her starring role in The Parkers, her Oscar-winning role, she won the 2010 Best Supporting Actress Oscar for Precious, and an infamous interview with Leonard on The Breakfast Club is definitely someone
First
that
the girl... First of all, you're calling him Leonard, you're trash.
Well, but that the people who know, they know, okay? But Monique is definitely someone that the girls, the guys, and the non-binary pals have some reservations about.
So whether it's telling Tyler Perry, Oprah, and Lee Daniels to suck her dick, or trying to have us miss out on the last couple of seasons of Orange is the New Black by boycotting Netflix, she has definitely caused a stir with her persona. And we were going through producing this episode and recognized that we could really just do this chronologically, because there's definitely a couple of turning points that really are where Monique begins to become challenging for people. Mm-hmm. So before we get into any of that stuff, though, Travelle, let's talk about our relationships with Monique. What is your relationship to Monique?
So I feel like I've always just, like, identified with, you know, those that are living large and taking charge, big boy.
Oh, my God.
That's a BAPS reference. Those who, again, those who know, they know. I always feel like I've just always, like, identified with, you know, our bustier ladies, our, you know, more largesse ladies, our big blonde and beautiful ladies. And Monique's comedy in particular about being a big girl has just always, you know, resonated with me as someone who, like, you know, felt a little outside of the norm or outside of, you know, whatever, you know, is supposed to be, like, acceptable. And then I saw a beautiful, fabulous movie called Fat Girls. That's P-H-A-T and Girls with a Z that for me, it was like, oh, wow, like, Monique's got layers, okay? She's got depth, honey. And she literally can, like, lead a major studio film. You know, then she, you know, did her book, Skinny Women Are Evil, Notes of a Big Girl in a Small-Minded World. That was in 2003. And so I've just, I don't know. And then, oh, and then she guest hosted the BET Awards, not only once, but twice. And
oh,
then
my God, that was such an iconic moment.
Listen, she did this homage dance to mainly Beyonce, but there was a little Usher thrown in there as well. And she was flanked by these other big girl dancers. And I was like, oh, this bitch is legendary, honey. Like, it was just, like, so major. And I feel like she was the person that, like, she was like your auntie, right? She was like that person that, you know, you knew would tell you the truth. You knew that she was going to hold you accountable and do what needs to be done. And then when it came to Precious, which is like a major, you know, legitimate role. And I know we're going to get into all of the drama around Precious. But, you know, that role, that movie, and like the way she was moving in the industry at that time, I just thought was like, oh, this is like... this is a moment, like, this is something significant. And I actually had the opportunity to interview her when I worked at the LA Times, is when she was in Will Packer's movie, Almost Christmas. And this was back in 2016. And, you know, I will say that the interview was great. It was amazing. Everyone loves me when I do interviews. You know this, Jared. Mm-hmm. I know you're jealous. But I do, you know, I just want to say that I love this woman. I want to make it clear that I love this woman more than I love Tyler Perry, for those of you who've listened to the Tyler Perry episode, okay? And so I have very little negative things to say about her, except for, you know, I guess some of the stuff we're going to get into. But you, Jared, what's your relationship to the queen of comedy?
So similarly to the Tyler Perry episode, Monique is one of those people who I don't remember when I first saw her. She's someone that I feel like has always been around for me. But I do feel like the first like distinct moment where like I knew that I was in love with her was probably the Queens of Comedy. But like, I remember her being on the Parkers and loving that. But I remember she was like the headliner, if you will. She was like in that last spot on the Queens of Comedy. And I just felt like she murdered it. And it was just so like, it was so good. They are all coming out of that big ass pyramid that turns around. She has on this amazing outfit that is like, I don't even know what it was. It was a suit, but it was like Asian inspired, but it was dope. And I just
she represented for the big girls when it came to fashion.
Yes, like really, really crushing it. And like I remember, like there's so many little moments that I remember from that Queens of Comedy special about her dating this dumb dude who went out to order a daiquiri and he pronounced it daiquiri. And she was like, "Nigga, what the fuck is a daiquiri?" Like I remember that. I remember her talking about like trying anal sex for the first time. I just remember so many moments from Queens of Comedy that like really stuck out to me. And just always thinking that she was just so hilarious. And then I interviewed Monique back in, I believe it was 2005 or 2006, when she did the Monique's Fat Chance, which was this,
this
pageant for Miss FAT or Miss Fat, which was Fabulous and Thick. And it was a pageant for women that would not get to participate in, you know, a traditional pageant. And I remember distinctly interviewing her right after she was coming off set from the Today Show. We did a phone interview. And it was the first time I'd ever spoken to her. And she kept referring to me as brother. "Hey, brother. How you doing, brother? All right, brother." And like something about it made me nervous because I've always had like an attachment to that language being associated with homophobia. And like it made me nervous. But like she was also so warm and kind and open to me that I just really appreciated her. And so after that, I always had more love for her because she didn't have to interview with me, this college kid who was doing like a college publication that had my name on it, but like was trying to interview people and trying to get my chops up back then. And so I have just always felt like Monique was around. She was always someone who I loved and appreciated. And so I can't put my finger on when I first saw her. I've always loved her. I've always thought she was really, really dope and funny and felt endeared to her for a long time.
Yeah, so let's get into, like, some of the stuff that we love about her. Obviously, there's a comedy. Obviously, there's, you know, some of the shows. I think the Parkers is probably, you know, one that the majority of people might remember most, right? It ran from 1999 to 2004. Was that on UPN? Was that UPN or CW or WB?
I think it was on UPN because I want to say that was long before the CW happened. But you'll remember there was the WB and UPN, and then they became the CW together.
Right.
And then, so the Parkers came out in 1999. Then her Queens of Comedy special came out in 2001. But what you, there's a thing that I remember seeing the promos for this show, but I never watched it. But
yes.
Flavor of Love, Charm School, where she took all these girls from Flavor of Love and put them through this charm school thing that she hosted with these mentors. You brought up this moment that I don't know how I never saw this, but it has really shaken me to my core.
Yeah, I've so not forgotten it. We need to say, right, that this show, it was in 2007. It's currently available on Hulu, and I may or may not be rewatching it right now with my partner. And the idea, this was after Flavor Flav had his show, Flavor of Love, where, like, he had all these women, like, competing to, like, you know, tongue him down and stuff like that.
Which, I mean, do we even need to address how outrageous the idea of that is?
We are not. We're going to let them love the way, love is love, Jarrett.
These awkward pauses still work even when we're remote. Great. Good to know.
Anyway, so the idea was that, you know, these women on Flavor of Love had just like shown their ass and they were so out of pocket that they needed an etiquette school to like reestablish themselves. And so in the first episode, right, of this show, this moment you're talking about, Monique is like calling the girls down. And for those of you who don't know, all of the Flavor of Love girls had these nicknames that Flavor Flav gave them, whether it was like Buck Wild or Boots or New York, right? The legendary Tiffany
New
York Pollard, okay? The HBIC, okay? Which, a quick aside, We don't talk enough about how Tiffany Pollard, okay,
set and her contribution. Stage. Yeah.
She set the stage for this trash reality television y'all trying to see. Remember that clip we talked about of Love is Blind a few weeks ago with Diamond Jack and Carlton? Okay. Maybe. Diamond Jack was trying to give us Tiffany New York Pollard, okay?
She gave but you she designer couldn't. Knockoff bootleg New York.
Listen, the great value version is what she was trying, okay? Anyway, so back to this clip. So Monique is meeting the girls for the first time, and she has them like taking off their name tags, which have these, you know, nicknames from Flavor of Love. And there's one woman in particular whose name is Safari.
Before you play it, I just want to say her name is Safari, and it is spelled S-A-A-P-H-Y-R-I. Which
you ain't had to do all that.
I just want to be clear about what we're talking about.
They were very willing to free themselves of those horrible nicknames. Safari, that represented something ugly. What is your real name, baby?
Safari.
Your real name is Safari.
I never got a nickname.
Why?
We instantly started to fight as soon as I got there.
Don't hit me with flowers!
Sapphire, I gotta let you go.
Say you again,
hoe!
I will see you!
I can't. I just love, because what you can't see is she says that my name is Sapphire, and like the look on Monique's face is, oh. Okay.
It's very, oh, my bad. You know, it's such a good moment. But this is what, you know, I think was one of the best parts about that show is that because Monique was a comedian, she was able to turn some of these moments that, like, you couldn't script if you wanted to.
Oh, into my God.
Just, like, comedy gold, okay?
But what I love about it is I know that those producers saw that moment coming because they put Sapphire up there last. They played her is what they did. They played Monique. So anyway, so Monique comes through a Flavor of Love charm school, has yes. this amazing moment that I love. Then Monique started the Monique Show, which was her late night show on BET. And yes. I will say I went to the Monique Show. I was in the audience. I have a photograph with Monique of the two of us. She had like a step and repeat where she would take photos with every single person in the audience. The thing that I remember the most about the Monique Show is like Monique would come out of this faux elevator and she'd walk down these stairs yes. and she would just scream for the first 30 seconds of the show.
Yes.
And it was just like, ah, my babies, my sugar. And it was like, she has got to stop doing that.
It was so perfect.
It was very her, right? Like it was just her like being so excited and having a good time. And it actually wasn't a bad show. She had a great band. She had a whole lot going on the show, but it only lasted two seasons. She was the only Black woman in late night at the time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
One of a few Black women to ever have a late night show. And I will tell you, I know people that worked on the show, very mixed reviews about what it was like to work with and for Monique. And even that was kind of an interesting thing because later on there'd be so much conversation about her, you know, her personality, what she was like to work with.
So before we get into that, I do want to give just a quick shout out to one of her comedy specials. Back in 2007, she did a comedy special at a women's prison.
Which was amazing.
I Could Have Been Your Cellmate. It's so amazing. You actually, if you're interested, you can actually rent it on YouTube. I'm not saying I have done it, but I have. And it's just so, so, so good. And one of the things about Monique is like, as her kind of star power grew, she continued doing stand-up. Like she was always doing stand-up shows, specials, all of that. She actually just released a new special a few weeks ago, actually, on Showtime. It's called Monique and Friends, Live from Atlanta. So if you're interested in some good, you know, some good laughs during this corona situation, you know, that's something to check out. But I think you're right. Around the Monique Show time period, that was about 2009, that's when things seem to start to go a little left for her. Because, right, that's when Precious premieres at Sundance, right?
I believe the movie is called Precious based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Yes, because they have to say that entire name. It's
so
thing.
Damn long.
Every single time. Listen, that's how you got to have a good agent to make sure your name is in the head every single time they read. They know where the what's it called, the source material came from. But anyway, so Precious premieres at Sundance in 2009. It comes to Sundance without having distribution. And now one of the really interesting things is that a lot of people didn't know and didn't think, I think is safe to say, that Monique could do drama, okay? And that she could do such a heavy dramatic role. But Lee Daniels, who was the director of Precious, actually had worked with Monique in a movie before Precious called Shadow Boxer, which is a very dramatic type of picture. And he cast her in Shadow Boxer ironically, as a woman named Precious. Now, we should say that there were headlines around that particular film because the original screenwriter who wrote the movie with all white people in mind was mad that Lee was casting all the blacks all over the place because he had Monique in a role that was written for like a 23-year-old white blonde woman. And then he had Macy Gray in the movie. But that's when we first saw her dramatic acting chops. Then Precious drops at Sundance and it makes waves. And the streets start talking about her performance. People, all of now, the reviews are like, this is really amazing.
It's really important that first of all, everyone has seen Precious, I'm sure. And if you haven't, Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire. If you haven't seen the movie, you just need to get your life in order. But like, I remember seeing this movie and being so like taken aback by how good she was in this movie. And also that was where we met Gaberae Sidibe, right? That was her introduction really to, you know, mainstream media. And I remember watching this movie and thinking that Monique was such an excellent actress in this movie that I thought like, this is a game-changing moment for her. We are going to start seeing her acting in a lot more stuff. Didn't turn out that way because of a few different things, but like this is where things started to change. So Monique wins the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress that year. She's one of very few Black women that has ever won that award. And she, when we were pulling up the clip for this, I remember saying to you that watching her even move around in this space is so hard to imagine now because she's so anti this stuff. But she gave this speech that even the speech to me came across as a little bit spicy. Take a listen.
First, I would like to thank the Academy for showing that it can be about the performance and not the politics.
So for her to say about the performance and not the politics, you hear the room start to clap and she continues to go on and you know, thanks more folks and everything. But like, I remember hearing her say those words and thinking like, that was a choice. Like, you didn't have to say that, but like, she decidedly did say it. And I remember thinking like, I bet you some people in that room are cringing right now.
Yeah,
she also thanked Tyler Perry and Oprah in that moment, which yes, we would then later find out, like, her relationship with Tyler Perry and Oprah was very strained at that point.
So we should say that Tyler Perry and Oprah, they basically were part of, like, the promotional engine for Precious. Like, they both committed to, like, using their platforms, their money, to, like, making sure people saw the movie. So, like, that's why they were thanked. But what's interesting is we end up learning that there was a lot of drama behind the scenes when it came down to the promotion of this movie. About 5 or so years later, Monique did an interview with the Hollywood Reporter reflecting on her win. And we find out that that's when all the conversations come out about Monique being blackballed, right? She says that she got a call from Lee Daniels a few months prior to this interview. And he says that she had been blackballed in the industry. That interview in the Hollywood Reporter, it goes on to talk about how it's basically a conversation between her and the reporter. And he was like, what he's trying to ask, how did your life change basically from the win? And she's saying, well, it hasn't really changed much. And she's like, you know, if we're under this belief, right, that after you win an Oscar, the roles are supposed to come in, the money's supposed to be doing what it's supposed to be doing. And she's saying that's not the case from her. And that perhaps this idea that she is difficult, that her husband is difficult, is the reason why she's been, quote unquote, blackballed. And one of those situations that kind of showed it, we end up finding out through all of this conversation, is that she was asked to go to, I believe it was Cannes, the Cannes National Film Festival, to promote Precious, and she did not go.
So
and she did not go because she would have had to pay out her own pocket to go. And now this is she was not interested in doing that.
This is an important piece of this story, though, because I think that when people hear like the full story of what happened here, Monique is not wrong. So when Precious was shot, excuse me, Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire, it was an indie movie. So she got paid $50,000 to do that movie, and it went to Sundance and did so well and got picked up and got international distribution, as many films do. But she was not paid anything more after that. She got the $50,000 that she got for shooting the movie. And, you know, that was probably more than a year prior to when this movie ended up going into theaters. And so realistically, that money was probably gone. And then they were asking her to go travel to France, because if you're not familiar with how the entertainment industry works, when these movies are, you know, being pushed around for Oscars and all that kind of stuff, there's a campaign that goes around that, right? There's a lot of work that goes into like getting people to vote for them and to choose them and all that. And so they were asking her to go to Cannes. They were asking her to go to do all these different interviews. And she said, you're going to have to pay me if that's what you want me to do, which does not sound unreasonable considering what she made.
I just want to throw in here, one of the issues that she said is like, she had been working so much up to this point, and she had had, based on the schedule that they had already agreed upon, she had had, I think it was like a week or 2 weeks off for like a little vacation. And she wanted to spend that time with her family. A lot of the other bigger movies, or the movies that are with bigger that are produced in-house at bigger studios, they have like a budget part of like the marketing campaign that is able to go toward flights and hotels and per diems and things like that. But this was an indie film that didn't have any of that.
Absolutely. I understood where she was coming from in this story. And I want to say that one of either Lee Daniels or Oprah Winfrey had offered to pay her out of their own pocket or something like that. Either way, she had been told, we understand where you're coming from. We understand why you feel this way. And like, to be fair, Tyler Perry and Oprah Winfrey are, Oprah's a billionaire at this time. Tyler Perry is a millionaire many times over. Right. He's many times over a millionaire. And so saying to her, like, well, we'll send you a plane, or we want you to do this, that, and the other. And it's like, you guys are making way more money off of this film than I ever will. And you're asking me to come work for free. I get that.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
And so after all this information starts coming out about some of the backdoor or under the table conversations that were happening around this, that's when we start to hear, you know, Lee Daniels starts doing interviews about, you know, her being difficult, her husband being difficult, being hard to work with. The streets start talking about how Oprah feels about the situation and Tyler Perry feels about the situation. And that leads us to the moment that we referenced earlier, in which Monique is on stage doing a stand-up bit, and she tells Tyler Perry, Oprah, and Lee Daniels to suck her dick if she had one.
Wow.
Which, part of this conversation
is like, strong choice.
Well, Monique has always been like a quote-unquote dirty or raunchy or, sexual-oriented type of comic. Right? She's always been that shoot from the hip type of comic. And so I remember watching that clip and being, gooped, being aghast, but also being like, oh, I expect that. Because what it ended up being, and what it's continued to be, right, is this back and forth between Monique and her husband, Sydney, and all of these other Black powers that be, that led to her not really having a lot of roles in the aftermath of this Oscar win, right? I want to give a quick shout out to Patrick Ian Polk. He put out a movie called Blackbird a few years after, I think maybe 4 or 5 years after Precious, in which Monique stars. And it's an amazing movie. It used to be on Netflix. I'm not sure if it's still there, but it's amazing, you know, queer coming of age really story.
Really beautiful movie.
It's so good. Monique is doing what needs to be done again. But that was one of the few roles that she had in this period. And then the next big role that she had was what I mentioned earlier in Almost Christmas.
Let's say here, Almost Christmas, very Black-ass Christmas movie, right?
Very that.
But like, yeah. Also, she makes that movie. The movie is funny because of her. The movie works because of her. Like, she is that movie, and it's so fantastic. But mind you, it also stars, you know, Danny Glover, Gabrielle Union's in the movie. Yes. But like, Almost Christmas is a Monique movie through and through.
And I think that movie was supposed to signal potentially and hopefully, right, a return for Monique. And then we have this moment from a couple years ago, the Netflix moment, right, is what we're calling it, where Monique is offered.
That feels so insufficient, but I'll take it.
Well, you know, our good sis, we love her for real. Monique was offered $500,000 to do a stand-up special by Netflix. And this was an event that like became a whole social media moment for her because she went on Instagram and shared it to Twitter, exposing the otherwise private talks that she had with the streaming service, and asking for all of her fans to boycott Netflix for gender bias and I think racial discrimination. Here's what she had to say.
Hey, my loves. I am asking that you stand with me and boycott Netflix for gender bias and color bias. I was offered a $500,000 deal last week to do a comedy special. However, Amy Schumer was offered $11 million, Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle, $20 million. Then Amy Schumer went back and renegotiated $2 million more because she said, I shouldn't get what the men are getting, they're legends. However, I should get more, and Netflix agreed. When we asked Netflix to explain the difference, why the money was so different, they said, well, we believe that's what Monique will bring. We said, well, what about my resume? They said, we don't go off of resumes. Then we asked them, what was it about Amy Schumer? And they said, well, she sold out Madison Square Garden twice, and she had a big movie over the summer. Is that not Amy Schumer's resume? And then Netflix said, by the way, we believe Monique is a legend too. Why shouldn't I get what the legends are getting? Please stand with me in this boycott of Netflix. I love us for real.
Okay, so first
she
things
loves
first.
Us for real, Jared.
I was going to say, first things first, loving us for real. I had forgotten that this came from that, like, because we use it so much now, but like, I love you for real. Like, it started here. This is where that moment began. But this is another instance where I understand what she's saying here, right? Because there is this double standard. Netflix has been paying money out the ass to people when it comes to their comedy specials or their acting deals. You'll remember Adam Sandler was actually the first person to have one of these deals at Netflix. And this was back in like 2015 or so. And he was like doing all movies for them. And like, those movies did whatever they did, right? I don't know how much of a splash they made, but like, they were paying money like crazy to people and still do to this day. So I understand where Monique is coming from, saying like, listen, y'all offering me $500,000 and giving Amy Schumer 12, something's wrong here.
Yeah, and we should say Wanda Sykes came out during this time period and also shared that she was offered actually even less than Monique for a special by Netflix. She, however, decided not to go forward with it, and she ended up selling a special to Epix. And then fast forward a few years, she just released an Emmy-nominated stand-up special on Netflix last year. So theoretically, they moved the comma a couple of places, and she got what she needed to get. And then she also, Wanda Sykes also has a sitcom with Mike Epps coming up on the streaming platform later this year.
My thing with this is I felt like she was not wrong for asking for more, but I felt like she had overestimated her social capital to be able to get people to walk away from Netflix because of this deal. Now, mind you,
y'all weren't interested. I mean, y'all already sharing y'all passwords, so y'all weren't interested in just stopping the one password.
well, sweetie, we're sharing our passports because we want to be a part of the movement. We want to see what's going on. Honey, I want to be able to watch the shows. So when I saw her, she was asking people to boycott Netflix, I was like, damn, sis, I don't think that you got the weight to be able to ask people to just walk away from Netflix. And clearly that was the case because people didn't walk away from no Netflix. But then like all of the details started to come out, right? And so they shared the emails. They had other conversations that came out. And like, again, I don't think Monique was wrong for asking for more money, because part of the mystique of Netflix, if you will, is that they don't really share a whole lot of their information. All of their information is proprietary. We don't know how many people are watching these movies. We don't know how many people are, you know, clicking into these shows. Mm-hmm. But and like, I mean, we always tend to hear how much people are making, but they don't ever confirm or deny that. So we have to kind of guess that they are picking the people that they are giving these enormous deals to based upon their social media following, based upon their ticket sales and the analytics. Netflix is a tech company before they're anything else. Right. And so they're looking at those analytics.
Yeah, but you know, the thing, a lot of things that people said, particularly around this moment, was, you know, she not wrong, but I don't like how she went about it, right? That's what Steve Harvey, right? That was one of the issues Steve Harvey had, you know, when she ended up going on his show to discuss this situation and a whole bunch of other drama, is like, he just felt as if it wasn't the right way to go about doing it. He felt as if she did not have like actions attached to her call to action, that folks, you know, boycott Netflix. But I kind of feel like we wouldn't know what we know about this situation if Monique didn't, you know, sound the alarm, right? Which then led to Wanda Sykes, you know, sounding her alarm, right? And now when you think of Black women comedians, Wanda Sykes and Monique are up there.
Absolutely.
They might be the top. Like, they might be. Actually, I'm going to say it, they are the barometer, because Whoopi's not doing comedy anymore, right? So, like, who else has the, in her words, the resume, right? The decorations?
Absolutely. She's a very well-decorated, and probably one of the most decorated Black female comedians of our generation, at least.
Yes, and that's not to erase, right? You know, I want to be clear, because, you know, I don't want the girls to say I'm trying to, you know, erase the Black women that came before her. But that's not to
that's
erase,
why
you
I
know,
said of our gen. That's why I said of our generation, because I don't want
the Marsha Warfields, yeah, the Moms Mabley's, the Lunells of the world. Hell, the Samores and she was in the Queen Latifah movie, Beauty Shop, and she played the Adele Givens.
Adele Givens.
Yeah. But it's not to erase those folks, but like, Monique has done something. And she got that Oscar. And we should say, I forgot, she got an Emmy nomination, I believe it was in 2015.
For Bessie.
Yeah, she was in Bessie. She played Ma Rainey opposite Queen Latifah. So like, the sis is doing the things.
All of those people that we've named that are, you know, that are well established and have done very well, none of them are as decorated as Monique is, right? Like, Monique has an Oscar. It's not shade at all. It's not erasure. It's not minimization or anything. But like, Monique has done a lot and has been very well celebrated in the industry. And so I hear what she's saying. I don't think she's wrong. And I do think that she has positioned this information in a way that is helpful for other people. She always positions herself as saying, like, I'm doing this for the girls that are going to come up behind me. I want to make sure that the girls that are comedians that are getting their own deals for whatever distribution platforms or whatever their films are, making sure that they get enough money. Because honestly, we wouldn't have known that Wanda Sykes got a lesser offer if Monique hadn't have talked about this. We wouldn't have known what Monique was being offered. And we probably would not have been talking about it in context against an Amy Schumer or a Chris Rock or, you know, or even Eddie Murphy, who got an enormous deal over at Netflix as well. And like, Monique is getting $500,000.
Part of me feels like a lot of this conversation we're having is because she is a fat Black woman who is owning her, what she believes to be, you know, her due. Like she wants to get paid what the broader industry says that she should be getting paid based off of all these decorations she got hanging on her wall, right? And I feel like we don't talk enough about that, like, particular brand of like massage noir, right, that she might be navigating, and sexism and all that other stuff she might be navigating because of how she shows up in the world. And then, you know, and I just also have to add, I think another thing that, you know, at least rubbed me the wrong way is when Roseanne Barr was being a racist. Y'all remember this was around the time when her show, the reboot of the Roseanne show, and she tweeted out the commentary around Valerie Jarrett. And Monique came out in support of her. And she said, "We've all said and done things, baby, that we wish we could take back and swallow and say, oh, but when you're in the public eye, you can't, and it's out there. But to put the title of racist on her," she said, "my sister made a mistake," and she said something I know she wished she could take back. "But what I would ask is we don't throw her away." And I think just her entire coming out in support of Roseanne, because she said Roseanne was very supportive of her when the talk show came out, excuse me. It's one of those instances where it seems like some of her judgment is just like not appropriately directed, I think some people would say. But I do want to go on the record before we wrap up and say that in terms of all of these issues and conversations about her potentially being difficult or, you know, all this other stuff, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. Like,
So the Valerie Jarrett thing that happened with Roseanne was her calling Valerie Jarrett a descendant of the Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes and like all this. It was overtly racist. And Monique came out and defended Roseanne in a way that I felt like was very on brand for Monique, right? Monique is one of those people who, she loves y'all for real, and she's always trying to talk about, you know, love and people working together, unless she's talking about Tyler Perry and Oprah Winfrey, in which she tells them to suck her dick. But I do think it's important that we recognize, like, that is a part of, like, who Monique is. And I can appreciate her saying, like, this person treated me kindly. I can't talk about, like, who they've been since that. But, like, I mean, I said that here last week with Tyler Perry, right? Like, I'm really challenged by what Tyler Perry puts out into the world. But, like, Tyler Perry was good to me. And, like, I got paid when I was in, you know, college years or my Atlanta years trying to just live. And so there's a balance that you have to just be honest about, like, what your background is with the person. And, you know, also have to try and figure out how to level that with the reality of the things that those people are doing. So I'm challenged by the way that Monique kind of moves through the world, but I also think, like, I can't say too many times that she's just been dead ass wrong.
I think we're going to look back on this moment and, you know, in perhaps what, 10, 15 years down the line, and the girls who are like trying to drag her and call her out and stuff like that in this moment will say that, you know what, Monique helped pave the fucking way.
Absolutely. I think history is going to remember her and treat her story a lot better than, you know, the current day will. I think they're going to look back on Monique and think of the ways that she's contributed to the conversation and, you know, shook the table, if you will. Before we wrap up this topic, we want to know what your thoughts are. So you can tweet us at Fanti Podcast, or you can jump into our DMs or our comments on Instagram at the same place, at Fanti Podcast, or you can send us an email at fanti@maximumfun.org. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, you're going to hear our dishonorable mentions and listener feedback. But here is a little bit from another Maximum Fun show.
Hey, you've reached Dr. Game Show. Leave your message after the beep.
Hi, this is Sarah, and I'd like to tell you about Dr. Game Show. Dr. Game Show is a band of geniuses or nerds or brilliant artists or kids or some combination of all of those who get together to make a show like no other that's family friendly. It's an interactive call-in game show podcast. When I found Dr. Game Show, I found joy. I told my friends and family that if they weren't listening, they were wasting joy. I sent them the episodes that made me laugh until I cried, played it for them in the car. They laughed too, laughed their butts off, but they still don't listen on their own. So they're wasting joy. And I keep looking for someone to understand me. Maybe it's you. Give Dr. Game Show a listen and find joy.
Listen to Dr. Game Show on Maximum Fun. New episodes every other Wednesday.
And now it's time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories of people that caught our attention this week and deserve a call out, either for their good or their stupid. Travel, why don't we do them in blocks together since we both are doing a thing here?
We have a theme this episode.
Yeah, so I'll go first and then I'll let you do yours, all right?
Okay.
All right. So my first honorable mention is going to the governors, the mayors, the county supervisors of the great states of this country who are leading the way and trying to stop the spread of coronavirus in ways that this president hasn't even heard of. From Governor Newsom here in California to Governor Cuomo and to the state of New York, Mayor Jenny Durkin in Seattle, and so many others across this country who are making really tough decisions without any real kind of guidance on what they should be doing from a federal level. Shout out to all of you. My second honorable mention is going to go to all the healthcare workers who are literally putting their lives on the line every single day, whether you're a nurse, a doctor, a receptionist, any person, a janitor that's working at a hospital. You all are doing God's work right now, and we need you, and we thank you, and we appreciate you for the work that you're doing that is trying to stop the spread of this epidemic right now.
That's it? That's all you got for the people? It's my turn now?
We said we're only doing two, right?
Yes, we did. Okay, you did the kind of serious, you know, honoring the folks who are putting, you know, do on the front lines of the epidemic, or it's not an epidemic, it's a pandemic. So I want to just give some recommendations for my honorable mentions for people just to like busy themselves. After you finish, you know, listening to this episode and the previous episodes of Fanti, some things that you can tune into just to like let your mind wander as the pandemic, you know, roils around you as you are in quarantine. Shout out to the legendary show America's Next Top Model. You can stream all of the...
That was my first job here in LA, working at Top Model.
You've had a lot of jobs, Phaedra Parks.
Sweetie, a life. You know, let me tell you.
Anyway, America's Next Top Model, all of the seasons are streaming on Hulu. You can start from season one and just work your way through. It's just something easy to do while you are, you know, trying to figure out how to survive. And then I want to shout out the Strong Black Legends podcast from Netflix's Strong Black Lead. They're interviewing all of our Black legends. They had an episode this season with Kyla Pratt. They just released one with Bill Bellamy. It's just really interesting to see them like give these folks their flowers, and it's a cute little, you know, situation just to like put on and listen to while you are ignoring the rest of the world. Proud Family, also, because I mentioned Kyla Pratt, is on Disney Plus. Like, you can literally just like go back to like, was it the early 2000s, and relive all of that greatness. Last but not least, we're going to get into some listener feedback. As always, we want to thank everyone who listens to the show and spreads the word to the people about why they should be listening as well. Go for it, Jared.
I want to we have like really cool analytics, so we can see that you guys are listening really all over the world, which is wild to me. But like, there are some like little dots in different countries around the world or different cities around the world where it's just like, hey, there's like one person that's listening here. So like, if you're listening right now in Lagos, we see you, girl. Or guy, don't know.
Or neither.
Or non-binary person, we see you. There's one person listening in Mecca. In Mecca, okay?
Shout out to you. Mecca as in the holy city?
Yes, there's somebody listening in Mecca.
Assalamu alaikum to you.
You almost messed that one up. We've got a lot of people listening in New Zealand. Shout out to the two downloads in Rotorua. I probably said that wrong. Don't hate me.
You did.
13 downloads in Wellington. We are popping in Wellington, New Zealand. And shout out to Dunedin. Dunedin.
It's okay. It's all right. We thank you all for who was listening to us, no matter where you're listening to us from. As always, we want to hear from you. We're asking you for 5-star reviews on iTunes. If that's your particular platform, you can also get us on all the wherever I can go down the list and say Spotify and all that other stuff, but it's really wherever you get Slayworthy audio. That's where you can find us. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show or any other show, tweet at us at Fanti Podcast, or follow us on Instagram at Fanti Podcast, or send us an email at fanti@maximumfun.org.
There are two of you in Bogota. We see you. We see you. We want to shout out to the creator of our show music, Corey. Corese. You can check him out wherever you get your tunes. He is Core.ece. And our photos are done by the creative genius, Ashley Nguyen. And our producer is Laura Swisher, who has gone way above and beyond to figure out how we could make this happen for these In the Closet episodes that will be happening for who knows how long.
And let's just say, you guys got to give us a break if the audio's a little wonky, if it don't sound like we together, because guess what? We not. But we're guess doing... what? We're going to get through this epidemic, the pandemic together.
We are doing our level best. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.